So good morning. And the words I'd like to share with you today have as their catalyst the topic of generosity. But I say that at the outset because maybe I won't get to it, generosity itself. But that's in the back of what I want to say. So in spiritual discourse, religious discourse, there's often recourse to poetry, the poetic kind of language that's not meant to be taken too literally, but more metaphoric. And in that kind of language, there's a teaching that's meaningful for me, and that is that each of us has a flame inside of ourselves. And how we tend that flame is a very important issue in human life. And one of the things is to discover what that flame is, and then discover how to tend it, nourish it, develop it, and then eventually to set it free. And if you take the idea of a candle flame, a candle flame does not do well in the wind. The wind can blow it out, or the wind can cause it to flicker. And when there's no wind, then the candle flame can be quite beautiful. In a sense, it has this beauty in the candle flame of being very still and very dynamic at the same time. And there's this still, kind of beautiful yellow kind of flame coming up that's inside. It's full of dynamism. But at the same time, it's completely still. And so the light doesn't flicker. Gives off a certain amount of warmth. So we have this inner flame, and that inner flame can flicker in the wind. It can be blown out. When I was about, I think, 14, I went to a boarding school that I didn't know at the time when I went there. I wasn't sent there because of this, but once I got there, I discovered it was a boarding school in Switzerland where all the kids who couldn't get along in other boarding schools were sent. And I was only there for a few months. And it was a beautiful place high up in the Alps. It was chosen for me because it was such a beautiful place high in the Alps. And one day I was walking with an older friend in school on this beautiful mountain road overlooking this beautiful valley below and the Alps above and the blue sky. And I was just walking in this amazing scenery, and I said to my, kind of an awe, 14-year-old awe, what's the meaning of life? You know, how do we fit into all this? And he was 17, and he looked down at me, and he said, don't be so silly. And that just snuffed it out. That kind of inquiry, that kind of sentiment, that kind of feeling, was kind of snuffed out. I was kind of like, snuffed out, but at least squashed or receded. And it wasn't until many years later that some of that sentiment, some of that inspiration, or some of that questioning came forth again. So sometimes it can be quite fragile to what other people say or society around us. And the flame that's within us, beautiful flame, is also susceptible to what is called in Buddhism sometimes the four winds and the four worldly conditions, or the eight worldly conditions. They're made up of four pairs. And these are the things that kind of the winds of the world that blow through and cause our light to somehow flicker, or sometimes it doesn't flicker, sometimes they actually cause the flame to turn into fire. And fire sometimes can burn really badly. So some of the winds that can cause these problems are gain and loss. So we gain something, we get something, we succeed in something, or we lose something, or we fail in something. And that has such a big impact on this inner flame that sometimes it can snuff it out or cause it to flicker, or sometimes it can actually turn it into a raging wildfire and cause tremendous devastation. And then there's the winds of fame and disrepute. So to get famous, or to have fame or have reputation or to be considered a certain way, you know, and or be to have disrepute can also cause a tremendous amount of flickering or problems with this inner flame. And then there's the flame of a little bit different from that, the flame, the wind of praise and blame. And you know, getting praised, it's kind of, it sounds good to be praised, kind of get kind of pumped up, but actually getting influenced by praise too much can cause all kinds of strange things to this inner flame. And blame as well. Blame, you can feel the pain of that. It's more easy to feel for most people. One of my favorite verses from Dhammapada goes something like, they'll blame you if you talk too much. They'll blame you if you talk too little. And they'll blame you if you talk just right, just in the middle. No one in this world is free of blame. No one in this world is free of criticism. So you might try to kind of, in all kinds of maneuverings, try to get yourself set up so that no one can possibly ever criticize you for anything. Find that place. And maybe the only place would be to just stay home all the time. But if people find out you're staying home all the time, they'll criticize you for that. And if you're never home, they'll criticize you for that. So they didn't. No one is free of criticism. And why I like that this verse in Dhammapada is that maybe it's true. And so maybe we don't have to take too seriously the blame, the criticism we get. And if we are slaves to criticism, if we're unduly influenced by the blame and criticism that can be put on us, the judgments other people might have on us, then you know, we're going to suffer. Our flame is going to suffer. It's going to flicker or go out or turn into a raging fire. And it's certainly a very painful thing in our society that people judge each other. But to be angry that people judge each other is maybe another kind of flickering of the flame. I think it's more valuable not to be caught up in judging the judgers, but to figure out a way to have our flame burn without being reacting to what's going on, the blame. And so the world of praise and blame, to not buy into that, not let that unduly influence us. And then the last of the worldly winds is pain and pleasure. So pleasure is a good thing. Nothing wrong with pleasure in and of itself. But too easily, the pursuit of pleasure, the attachment to pleasure, the resistance to discomfort, the reaction to discomfort, the judgments around discomfort, the assigning of meaning and world philosophy around pleasure and pain can cause this inner flame to flicker and to cause the inner flame to go out or sometimes turn into a raging fire, as I keep saying. The raging fire sometimes of anger, sometimes of lust and desire. So what is this inner flame that is so beautiful, that's so precious in each of us, that somehow can be unduly influenced by the conditions of the world? Maybe each person has their own sense of what that flame is. And for me to say this is what the flame is maybe a disservice to each of you. But what is that flame? What's that inner warmth, the inner well-being, or inner light that's discovered when the heart or the mind, the inner life, is not influenced or not in a reactive relationship to the winds of the world, when it's not in a reactive relationship to its desires, craving, or its ill will or aversions? And one of the functions of meditation practice is to somehow settle the flickering, still the flickering, or settle the fire so the inner flame can be there in its own beauty. And one of the ways to discover that is a practice of non-reactivity. So not to react to things, not allow ourselves to react to the things that go on. So certainly if somebody's sitting meditating and someone comes along and says, "Oh, that's, you look like a, the world's best meditator. That's a great meditator you are," you might feel kind of good, but you've reacted. You've caught. And you say, "What's wrong with feeling good?" Well, you've been influenced by something outside of yourself, and in that influence, you've lost touch with something that's inner. You've kind of gone from the inner to the outer. If someone comes along and says, "You're the worst meditator," then again, and you, if you get react to that, "Oh no, I should never come to IMC again. I don't belong here." Well, then you've caught up. You're reacting to something. And often human life is made up of a whole series of reactions. A reaction to this and that and this. Or wanting this, not wanting that, do all this. And there's so much momentum in the reactivity that part of what meditation practice is doing is settling away the momentum of the reactivity. And some of the momentum takes a while to settle away. Just like if you do yoga posture, it takes a while for the muscle to stretch. You know, you can't just suddenly say stretch muscle. You know, they say in yoga that if you force your muscle to stretch or your tendon to stretch, you damage it. You kind of just, so you have to kind of be very patient. And so you have to kind of just allow it to kind of stretch in its own time. So in the same way, there's a lot of momentum in our mind or hearts from the momentum of the desire and wanting and clinging and holding. You can't just say, enough of that. But you have to somehow create the conditions that allow it to settle away, to relax, to soften. And so meditation hopefully is one of those conditions. And what supports that the most is not reacting to our reactivity. So not reacting to the discomfort, not reacting to the momentum of the mind, the busyness of the mind, the agitation of the mind, the agitations of the body. Just letting it be there. Letting just kind of be there in the stillness of your posture, stillness of your mind. Not judging yourself for or against it, not praising yourself or blaming yourself, not reacting to the pleasure or the discomfort that might be there as you meditate, not being concerned about praise or blame around your meditation, you know, expecting to be the best meditator or the worst or how you look for other people. And so just let things be as they are. And then with time, there's twofold kind of thing going on here. One is we stop reacting to what is, and then in no longer reacting, we allow the momentum of past reactivity to settle away, to relax. And some things relax very quickly, and some things might take months or years of meditation to really soften and relax. Some momentum of reactivity or clinging is pretty mild. And simply you can tell yourself, relax the shoulders, and sometimes they will. And some things are so deeply rooted and so locked in so for example, the attachment to being right or the attachment to certain kind of pain, certain kind of suffering or injustice been done to us might be so deeply rooted inside of us that even to get close to it is a big task, is hard to do. But with time, we settle away. So what is it that's left when the reactivity to things falls away? What is it that's left when the inner life is no longer living in reaction to the conditions of the world around us? What's left when the inner life is no longer looking outside of itself for its fulfillment? What is it that the inner life is not looking outside of itself for protection? So externalizing our concerns, what's left? And so I think one of the beautiful things about mindfulness meditation or meditation is this process of letting go, of shedding, like the snake sheds its skin perhaps, shedding all the stuff that's extra, and then discovering something beautiful that's inside of us. And sometimes it takes a long time. I remember when my father, when I first started getting involved in meditation a lot, I think I was going to go to Thailand. My father was taking me to the airport. And he was kind of curious kind of about this meditation thing I was doing. I was in my 20s, doing all this meditation, living in monasteries. And so he asked me about it, you know, to explain, you know, what was this about? And in order to try to explain to him in a way that maybe he would understand the attraction it had for me, I said that it was like falling in love. That somehow the experience of meditation, the experience of being settled, letting all the stuff fall away, the beauty that was there, was kind of as compelling as falling in love. because it was so lovely, so lovably, lovingly, lovable, and it had this kind of sense of inner radiance and warmth and delight that maybe can be there sometimes in falling in love with someone. And there are certain advantages that exist, maybe disadvantages, but certainly certain advantages that exist if falling in love doesn't require another person. So that inner radiance, inner beauty that can be there. Now, some people don't know anything about their inner warmth, their inner light or flame. And so they look for warmth from other people. They look for light from others in order to fulfill them or to kind of to fill that part of themselves. And sometimes it's a bit of a problem because sometimes it's always oriented externally. That person's going to do it for me. That person's going to provide me with the warmth. Then there's a kind of alienation or separation from ourselves. Sometimes two people can meet each other, both of them looking externally for someone to provide the warmth. And they don't exactly provide the warmth to each other, but they just love being together because they're companions in looking. Companions in having that need. And so it feels so good to be someone else with someone who has the same need. So what is it that when we start looking externally, what can be discovered inside is really the big question today. What can be discovered inside that's fulfilling? What can be discovered inside that can feel complete, that requires nothing else? A sense of happiness, a well-being, a sense of peace, a sense of light. So the Buddha said once, near the end of his life, he said, be a light unto yourself. Dipa. Dipa means also means like a flame, be a flame unto yourself. So how do you discover that flame? And how do you allow that flame to be unmoving? One of the words for meditation in Buddhism is jhana. And sometimes the word jhana is used for deep, concentrated meditation, absorption meditation. And the word jhana comes from the word jayati, which means to burn. So what is that can allow us to burn inside? So rather than snuffing and going still or going cold in meditation, meditation is a kind of inner warmth or light or radiance that gets stronger. And how do we discover that when the habits of mind are so strong to be external, to want things, to desire, to fantasize, to imagine, to resist, to hate? You know, when the mind is focused on things and thoughts and ideas and feelings, you know, always outside of itself. So how is it the mind can, in a sense, the heart can turn in on itself, settle and feel settled on itself? And I think for some people it's a very threatening idea. For some people it's a very cold idea. For some people it's, I think, a very uninteresting idea, because we're taught and people believe that it's the world that provides us with meaning and excitement and purpose and all this stuff. So in Buddhism, then, we have this idea of meditation, this inner burning. And the inner flame can be unmoving and dynamic. Or if it's maladaptive or malreactive, then that inner flame can turn into a fire. And so in Buddhism, they talk about the fire of greed, the fire of hate, the fire of delusion. And there's a beautiful sermon, talk by the Buddha, where he says, and kind of, I imagine in the kind of great rhetorical style, the world is on fire. It's on fire with greed. It's on fire with hate. It's on fire with delusion. So this inner flame. Now there's something very beautiful about the inner flame, and that is it gives warmth. And I think it's very important to allow that warmth to radiate from us. And I think that that warmth has different qualities, or different is expressed in different ways. And one of the ways is through gratitude or appreciation, the simple feeling of being grateful and appreciative. It's hard to feel grateful or appreciative when the mind is in its reactive mode, when the mind is not settled, when the mind is not relaxed. If the mind is agitated, tense, wanting something, desiring something, trying to fix something, always kind of preoccupied, it's really hard to feel grateful. And then gratitude requires real gratitude, with deep, deep, satisfying, warm, glowing gratitude. I think requires us to be pretty relaxed, pretty settled, pretty at ease. That sense of ease. I think maybe you'll disagree with me, but it's hard to feel a deep sense of gratitude. And one of the reasons I like to bow at the end of meditation is that I feel often I feel a lot of gratitude by the time I finish my meditation practice. And sometimes people ask me, "What are you grateful for?" And I can't quite tell. I don't know if for anything is the point. I just feel grateful. Is it okay to feel grateful for no reason? And so just nice to express that gratitude. And I could probably fill in reasons, but that seems a little bit trite to try to give reasons for this feeling, the sense that's there. So closely connected to gratitude is appreciation, to feel appreciation. And I think, again, it's hard to feel appreciation if we feel we're incomplete, we feel like there's a lack, we feel that the world needs to provide us with something has to change or be fixed, that we're not enough. It's a lot easier to feel relaxed when we feel like we're enough. And this wonderful thing about meditation is that you can feel enough without getting anything. You can feel enough without things in the world changing. Someone can still be really angry with you. Someone can still be telling you that you are an awful person. Someone could, you could even have done something really terrible that you feel bad about. And it's possible to settle enough, quiet enough, and to feel, in a sense, some deep sense of enoughness, deep sense of fullness and completion. And then from that, I'm saying, comes this warmth. And that warmth, that glow of that warmth, is expressed in such feelings as gratitude, as appreciation, as love, as kindness, as generosity, as warmth, since we're talking about a flame. And one of the things I find very, very meaningful is the way in which these qualities can come almost unprompted. It isn't that we have to kind of tell ourselves, "Oh, I'm supposed to be generous now, I'm supposed to be kind now," as if it's a thing we have to do. It's more like it's something effortless. It's something that seems to just flow in that glow. One of the beautiful qualities of the inner flame is awareness itself, to be aware. And I hope that people who practice meditation eventually discover that awareness, being aware, doesn't require effort. That being aware is a delight. It's something quite not wonderful. That being aware is part of that inner flame, that inner glow. To simply be aware. I know that when the mind is in its reactive mode, it can take a lot of effort and work in order to pay attention, to be mindful. But when we've shed the reactivity, we've settled and quieted the reactivity, then awareness is not a lot of work. It just is. There it is. We're aware. And so these qualities that come from that isness of the still flame, the quiet flame. So a still flame, the quiet flame, can seem uninteresting to people who want things in the conventional ways of success in the world. But the paradox or the irony is that once we get a sense of the inner flame, coming out of it comes some of the most beautiful qualities that humans can experience and express. And I would venture to say that many of the attempts to get things in the world to be just right, the right job, the right house, the right relationship, the right whatever, I would venture to say that the desire to get that sometimes is a indirect way of attempting to touch into these beautiful qualities that are available in a much more direct and immediate way. And that still flame, that quiet, silent place inside, is also dynamic. Remember, a candle flame is both still and dynamic. So it's not dynamic because it's reactive, it's dynamic because it's responsive, because it flows out of it. So rather than reacting to the world, we're being motivated. The motivation is coming from within. So the question for you is, what is your flame? And what do you know about an inner flame? Have you touched an inner flame? Have you felt it? Have you seen the inner light, an inner light? Something you'd call that, using that kind of poetic language. What is your inner flame and inner light? And does anything that I've said today resonate with what you've tasted and touched and felt inside of you? And what does it take for you to nourish that inner flame, that inner light? Or if you haven't tasted it or touched it, what would it take to discover it, to be motivated to that possibility of finding it? And I think that certainly nourishing it, letting it grow or becoming a bigger part of our life, requires us to appreciate what it is, to appreciate its value. And since it has no monetary value, no recreational value, or whatever, then it's very easy to kind of dismiss it or overlook it. But in order to nourish this inner light, this inner flame, it needs to be appreciated. So do you appreciate it? How do you appreciate it? How do you give time for it? And do you give time for it? Do you give real time for it? Or is it mostly something that you'll get to eventually? Eventually, I'll give time to it. Eventually, you know, when I retire. Eventually, when I get old. Eventually, I'll get time to nourish and develop this inner flame. So it becomes a strong thing, a bright light for us. So I hope that each of you can become a really beautiful, bright flame, light that can glow and give warmth and light to a world that sometimes seems to have not enough warmth and not enough light. So I hope that as you discover your inner stillness, the inner stillness brings forth all these beautiful qualities that in you that you will share with others. And that way we can all be thankful for each other. So thank you.